Welcome to the Soft Spot.
Welcome.
Welcome back. If you're back.
And if you're new, welcome.
Just straight up welcome.
So glad you're here.
My name is Julian.
And I am Meg.
And together we are the Soft Spot. We said that.
We did say that.
We have an amazing show today. Our show in general is just supposed to feel good, have fun. You know, we talk about people's favorite things. And today's is a doozy.
It is.
It's great.
The aim is always to, you know, bring up meaningful, nostalgic discussions.
Mm-hmm.
We are people who totally love the past. And right now, the world is a big fiery turd.
The present sucks. So let's live in the past.
Let's just live in the past, baby.
And today's episode is so meta because it is about Back to the Future, which
is basically what
we could have called this podcast, Back to the Future.
It's about the present. It's about the future in the past.
Yeah, it's like so hard to wrap your mind around. Good thing we have Michael J. Fox to help us.
Exactly.
So we had a blast talking to Rhea about this movie.
Yes.
And I think we should just get to it.
I think so, too. Also, I got to say, like Landon and I were discussing, mm-hmm. Rhea talked about baseball, and I don't really know anything about baseball.
You love the butts.
I love the butts. I love the beers and the butts, baby. But Rhea is just so like enthusiastic about the things that they're into mm-hmm. that it makes you want to be into it too. And that's kind of the best guess that we can ever hope for.
So let's get to it. Thanks for coming, Rhea.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Sure.
Glad we finally got a time that worked.
Yeah. Did you just move into this place?
Yeah, like October 29th or something like that.
Okay.
And then I do
demand the day.
I had like booked a vacation like, months before I was even like solidly going to move.
Uh-huh.
Because it was very up in the air and then it was a decision. I mean, I was looking for a while and then I was like, somebody's got to do something. So I like signed the lease and then moved in. I moved all my shit in like 2 days. I got movers because I can't lift a couch by myself.
Yeah.
I moved it all in. I went on vacation to Ojai, had like a fucking amazing vacation
That's
for
great.
5 days. Got back, got on a plane, did a small weekend in Sacramento, came back, and then unpacked my shit for 2 weeks. And I did it in 2 weeks, and I'm like fully moved in.
Good.
In November. I like did it by myself.
Wow.
In less than a month with work and a vacation.
I like that you're saying that like, by yourself, like people keep telling you you can't do things by yourself. You're an adult.
They do all the time.
There's nothing I love more than like getting situated in a place.
Yeah.
I love to nest like a motherfucker.
Oh, it feels good. And I also was like, oh my God.
That's a t-shirt. Nest like a motherfucker.
Like a motherfucker. So much stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy to. I mean, I moved 7 years of.
Wow.
Plus everything I moved into that 7 years, then moved that again.
Right.
It's nuts when you realize how much shit you own.
Yeah.
And it's like, how did I accumulate all of this?
How did I get all of this? And I honestly was like, move it and then get rid of it. That's because I was like, if you get rid of this stuff, you're going to have, it's going to feel bad. And you're going to be like, I shouldn't have gotten rid of that.
I'm the opposite.
Yeah.
I'm like,
because I'm definitely going to get rid of stuff. I told myself you have to get rid of some of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt like I would be making the decisions in a panic as opposed to like, I really don't need this.
Right.
I'd call you a selective hoarder because there are just certain things that I feel like for whatever reason, you just can't let go of. Mm-hmm. And then you just stash them. But other stuff,
like a raccoon.
Yeah, like things that we use every day.
I did stash a raccoon. How did you remember?
Things that we use every day, like practical items. You're like, we don't need this anymore. I don't like how it
like
looks on this table.
Spatulas? I don't think so.
Yeah.
Let's trim it down.
By the way, you screamed somebody do something. And I was like, that's my new alarm on my phone. When I wake up in the morning, it's Rhea going, somebody do something! That's how you start your day.
It's a great way to start the day.
It's like a cup of coffee and a finger in the butt.
Yeah, yeah.
And you said you live by an elementary school.
Yeah.
Here's my question.
Yes.
Do you hear the kids playing?
All the time. But they're
how
young enough.
How do you feel
enough
about that? Because you're a single person.
Yes. No, I understand.
With no children.
So, I mean, I have a dog child. But that's also like split custody there,
like
too.
A monster.
Yeah, he is a freak of nature. But you know, they're younger than elementary, I actually think. And so when I hear them play, there is one thing that I'm like, do they have to have the cymbals every day? Could we just have the tiny cymbals on Tuesdays and Thursdays, maybe? Mm-hmm. That's the one thing that I'm like, this is going to take a minute for me to get used to.
Maybe it's just a wind-up toy monkey.
Sure. Could we get rid of that thing? But, they actually play in a way that feels really nice. Mm-hmm. Like, because I don't know if you've ever stayed at Sketchfest. There's a particular hotel, the Buchanan, that is right next door to a like preschool that lets out at, you know, 10.
Uh-huh.
And you're like, you know, you just flew up to, it's like a weird, you're jet lagged, whatever, doing this festival. And then it's just kids screaming bloody murder. And you're like, why? But they don't do that. Like this, right. I just have, I mean, occasionally, you know, they're making noise and stuff, but they're actually just playing in a way that is actually like makes me feel nice.
Aww. Yeah. I gotta say, for the most part, we've got two preschoolers, and for the most part, it's like pretty sweet to hear them playing.
Yeah.
I think the worst,
like cute stuff.
The worst sound is when the recorder. When they start playing the recorder,
yeah.
That's elementary school. So if you live by one of those, I feel for you.
Yeah.
But I think it's solidly like preschool.
Yeah.
You know? So like I'm like really
lucky
there.
So cymbals are the worst thing.
Yeah.
I guess it's not that
bad. Because
those
are at least in tune.
Yeah.
You know, like a recorder, you have to have, like, why do we have kids playing that? Because it's impossible to play in tune. You have to have such like specific mouth to get a recorder to sound in tune.
We should give them all full harps.
Yes. I agree. Julie and I agree.
The sound of kids that little playing is just the sound of sharing.
The sound of
wafting
fun.
Through the air.
I looked out. I was taking the trash cans back in, and there were just these kids like deciding what they were going to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like figuring the game out, whatever mm-hmm. it was. And I was like, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's, I remember that. That was a lot of fun when you're like, what are we doing today? And you have nothing.
Yeah.
And you're just coming up with like just doing improv or whatever for fucking fun.
Yeah.
I know. That's wild. Ours are like, I'm going to be the princess and you're going to be the fairy and I live in the castle and you're going to come in and you're going to bring me cookies. They like map this whole
story
world out. Well, and that's the most you're going to do with your day. I'm so jealous of you.
I've noticed, I listen to them pretty closely sometimes to make sure my daughter's not being a jerk.
Yeah.
And they'll create these elaborate scenarios. So they're like, you're the princess. I'm the queen. It's inauguration day. Well, you know, like they do all this thing.
Yeah.
And then they it's like it's all set, right? And then they do one interaction. So it'll be like, okay, here's go to sleep. And then they do a wand thing.
Yeah.
They go to sleep. And then the other one will wake up immediately and go, okay, now I'm the mama and you're the baby. So it's like we just spent 10 minutes
so much
building that world. And then all we did was go to sleep
go to
and
bed.
Wake up.
Yep.
And now you're the mama and she's the baby and now it's a whole new thing. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's
yeah,
not. It's like
great.
Live in that space for a while,
but
man.
They
you
already
just
did.
It.
Oh. But they just, you know what I mean? The creation of it is the living in it.
Yeah,
because they're like figuring out their like autonomy of it, of like control of the narrative.
Right.
You know?
I know. I guess
they don't
I should
even know
stop.
What a fucking narrative is. You know? Like, they're just like, this is what's happening.
I guess I should stop interrupting and being like, actually, let's yes and that one. Yeah, but there's a lot of no buts instead of yes ands
sure,
with them, but it's okay.
Yeah.
So we asked you what your soft spot was, and you said...
Back to the Future.
Back to the Future.
And baseball, but Back to the Future.
Yes.
Definitely. Also malls. I was thinking about that.
I love curveballs.
All these things fit. So, like, I don't know. I like to talk about a lot of stuff. I hope you like having meandering conversations.
We do, and our podcast is 3 hours. So
yeah. Perfect. Yeah.
Let her rip, baby.
I'm in
we'll
for the
going.
Long haul.
Mm-hmm. So Meg was excited because she loves baseball.
Great.
I'm kidding.
Well, I actually don't know anything about baseball, but
that's
I love
cool.
I was a cheerleader.
That's cool. Baseball, known for not having cheerleading.
It's true.
You can say what you told me when I said, what about baseball?
I love the outfits.
That's cool, because guess what? I do, too.
Yeah.
I
love the look of it. Love the old-timiness.
Yes.
You can just say what you're trying to say.
Baseball players are very sexy.
Yeah.
You should see Rhea in a baseball outfit.
Yeah, you should see me in a baseball outfit.
I'm sure it's
outfit.
A very good look.
Yeah,
it's a solid look. I put
it's
it together.
It's probably your profile pic.
I mean, it was. It is on my baseball league Slack, for sure. Yeah, no, I mean, I love baseball, and I also am not the kind of, like, I like sports in general, you know, but baseball is, like, my jam for sure. Mm-hmm. And I'm not the kind of sports fan that is, like, super elitist about it,
right.
Or, like, if you don't like it, I hate you, or so. It's mm-hmm. like, I also respect not liking something, because guess what? I also fucking hate baseball. Like, that's, yeah. like, why I love it, you know? It's like, mm-hmm. Both of those things exist for me, too, so I'm always curious why people hate it, and also, oftentimes, I can get people that hate it to kind of get on board with it, and not by strong-arming them about it.
Yeah.
It's like, these are the things I love about it, and this is why. And people are like, oh, I didn't think about it that way. I'm like, I know!
I feel like, and I might be wrong, I feel like it's probably one of the most straightforward sports to understand.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I have a lot of happy memories of going to baseball games with, like, my grandpa. And,
yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't say I actively know a ton about it.
Sure.
Definitely don't know any statistics.
You don't need to know those.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm like, I don't.
But the whole,
it's so
the whole
stats
vibe,
heavy.
It's
yeah.
very feel good.
It, I think, is the most nostalgic game. Like, American sport that exists. And I'm sure people that are huge hockey fans, huge football fans, huge basketball fans have nostalgia for the sport. And I like, for the most part, all of those sports.
Mm-hmm.
And the nostalgia for them and the old days of those sports, all that stuff. But to me, baseball is a game that is played within the history of the game every time it is played.
Yeah.
Because you're talking about stats and stuff. Like, I don't like sabermetrics, which is, like, all these numbers that everybody's, like, this data-driven game or whatever. I'm not a huge fan of it. Sometimes it totally gets me going, and I'm mm-hmm. like, that's interesting. Wow, I can't believe you can compute all that, but
right.
that's cool. But for me, the stats that I'm into are, like, on this date, this has never happened. This happened now. And, it, you know, like, those, like, this guy has never stood there and caught this ball and thrown it that way. You
yeah.
know what I mean? It's like, it has those kind of stats, which mm-hmm. you just don't have in basketball. You
no.
have, like, the highest scoring game. Rad. That's cool.
Yeah.
But, like, the stats in baseball are just, like, I mean, I wish I had one at the ready on my, it'll come out in
I know.
The middle of Back to the Future. But there's just, like, you know.
I know four stats.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah.
Well, that's a joke, but I do know one stat, and that's that Daryl Strawberry's career batting average was .239.
There you go.
He also has the record for most foul tips in a at bat. 14 in a row.
14 in a row.
Yeah. That's two stats.
There was one that's.
Okay, we're good.
it's specifically foul tips.
He had 14 foul tips in a row. He also has the record for the longest at bat. In
Crazy.
That same
yes,
at bat.
In yeah. that same at bat.
Yeah.
Because Brandon Belt of the San Francisco Giants had one that was 20 plus minutes this season.
Oh yeah, that was probably six pitches.
yeah, it was
just a lot
it was
of hanging
a crazy.
Out. No, that's crazy.
I think probably the most impressive stat is one that you've just created, and it has taken you probably a whole 6 minutes to go without saying that you played varsity baseball.
Oh!
Because I thought
know.
that was going to be the first thing out of your mouth.
I don't know if you could tell
that.
By listening to my voice, but I was a varsity shortstop.
Oh, shit. You're a shortstop? Holy
was,
shit, dude.
Yeah, I was,
all right.
And
did
when
you
you're talking
pitch
about,
at all? Or,
I did, yeah. In fact, I pitched in the league that you were playing in.
Oh, right, because you were on the Tignataros.
Yes.
I forgot
and,
for a minute, because like, I had to wipe CBA out of my brain a little bit.
I played like three games or something like
right.
that.
I remember that now.
And I offered to pitch, and this is no exaggeration, and I try not to complain about it too much, but I legit injured my right shoulder pitching.
Yeah.
Like, I can't do certain yoga poses and stuff like that anymore.
Still?
And it was like three years ago. Yeah.
Right.
It was crazy.
Yeah. No,
anyway.
There's some legit, like, dude on my team, Christian, I don't know if you ever met him because he played back then, but he tore his ACL.
Ugh.
Just rounding third, like
that's
on
why
the bet,
I stopped because
you know?
I'm like years old, and
yeah,
and I don't need to tear my ACL.
I know
playing
I know.
Recreational
I know.
Baseball. No offense, but you don't
no,
have children,
no.
so it doesn't matter.
No,
you
you're
totally...
allowed to say that because it's fully true.
Yeah,
it's like yes, I've had moments where I'm like, whoa, you need to chill the fuck out
because mm-hmm.
like this is not what needs to happen right now. I mean, the game three of our World Series that my team did win that. I got to win the World Series. Thank you so much.
the World Series of Pasadena.
Yes. But, I mean, well, the World Series of Burbank because we
yeah.
moved fields.
Oh, Burbank. Oh, okay.
Because we weren't allowed to play at the other one anymore.
Oh.
But my, like, major league teams are never going to win the World. I'm never going to watch a major league team win the World Series that I love. I've just mm-hmm. resigned myself to that fact. But I won the World Series, and that is so much better.
It's almost better.
It is better, actually.
To win it yourself.
But I got hit in the face with, like, a wild grass. Like, we were just doing pepper, and it hit the edge of the infield. There was a big lip of grass. And I am telling you, it gained 15 miles an hour off that thing.
Yeah.
And it cranked me in the face. But if I was going to... It was, like, the best spot I could have gotten hit in. And, I just, like... fell on my butt and was like, oh shit. And I was spitting blood until the fourth inning. Like, that's how big of a cut it was. And my shortstop was like, your reaction to that did not befit how hard that hit you. And I was like, I know, because I wanted to play. Yeah. I did not want to come out.
And now you have a plump lip.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That's,
you
a lot
can
of
see the stitches from the ball. Like 4 days later, on my vacation, I had like a big blue lip, but it was fine. I didn't need stitches or anything like that.
Oh man, just getting hit in the face.
Yeah, it wasn't, but it happened so fast. There was nothing I could do. The ball was going to be here, and it went here.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no time to get up there.
The nostalgia part of baseball, I understand, because it's a whole world. There's smells and sounds and all that kind of stuff. Like you said, hockey isn't that nostalgic. I guess people can feel that way, but if no one's like,
the
smell of the
person.
Ice.
Yes, right. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
The smell of the Staples Center.
Right.
I just feel, you know, baseball is very lucky in that it is an outdoor sport that happens at a time when you have
time
to be outside.
Yeah.
You want to be outdoors and you have the time to, because it's summer. Obviously, our work schedule as a culture is awful these days, but like generally speaking, you could go to a baseball game and in the summertime, kids are off, they go to the game, you're outside, you like could just hang out and you're basically having a picnic while people are playing a sport, and you can watch it if you want to or not. You know?
Can check in, check out.
Kind of love that about baseball. Like,
yes.
You don't have to like super closely follow everything that's happening.
I don't think this is true. The reason I quit was because I was sitting standing at shortstop. I wasn't
bad.
I was standing at shortstop, and I remember thinking, I'm bored, and there are people watching this.
Yeah, sure.
And I'm in the game. So
much better to be like hanging out with a beer and, you know, looking up and seeing cute butts and checking in, checking out.
And I mean, the thing I also like about it is if you are the kind of person who does want to watch all of it, you can, and it builds. And because, you know, like the World Series in Major League Baseball is a time when more people watch because it's like appointment viewing and people jump in and they're like, this is so exciting. And then you're like, yeah, I know. And you've been watching it, because then there's the people that have been watching the whole season. So I watched the whole story lead to this moment, but you can come in the last game and still enjoy it. And that's what I love about it. It's like, I don't think my version of watching all of it, like I deserve some, you know, whatever, like these people are dumb. I'm like, this is cool that both of these things can exist and we enjoy it at the same level.
Right. Yeah.
You know, like I can watch 160 games and be like, wow, and like be so excited about it at the end. And you can come in and this is the only game of baseball that you watch all summer and we're both into it.
Yeah.
I gotta say, I also admire sort of the precision about it. I hate that a lot of other sports feel so violent. Like, I can't really watch football without
it's
being
terrible.
Like kind of horrified by like the injuries that you see and just like, ugh, it feels so like barbaric and mean.
Yes.
Also, if you don't learn the rules to football as a child, it's like learning a foreign language. It's so complicated.
I also like I do get down with the athleticism of offense in football. You know, like I can get down with the athleticism of defense, but I feel like it used to be different, where like guys weren't actually, it wasn't just pummeling each other and these head first tackles and stuff, you know, because like I played flag football in Chicago and I was like, this is fun.
Yeah.
Like that is fun. Like throwing a ball, catching it, running play, like all that shit is awesome. But then I watch the NFL. Number one, the Colin Kaepernick shit is bullshit. Number two, domestic violence there is bullshit. And I can't throw too many stones because baseball has the same problem. So.
Oh, I thought you were going to say I can't throw too many stones because I beat the crap out of my wife.
Absolutely not. Because baseball has the same problem.
Yes, yeah.
And then also the CTE stuff. So it's like way too many factors for me to get down with it. But then also when I do happen to watch it, the game starts and stops so much. They're calling penalties every play.
Yeah.
Everything has to be talked about. Everything gets reviewed. Like, especially, I think it's a little different this season, but the season before that, every catch they were reviewing and then saying not a catch because, like, it bounced in their hands.
I know, it's crazy.
I'm like, no. Football was not invented when we had this stuff. So you have to adapt the sport to these, like, you can't take a Viper camera and point it at a dude catching a ball that's going, what, 70 miles an hour?
Yeah.
Down 100 yards, and he's catching it, hitting the ground, and it's bouncing, so it's not a catch?
No.
Are you out of your mind? You just ruined the game.
You can do that, because with the Viper technology, you can catch
It's so stupid. It's so dumb. Like, I really didn't... I don't like that about it.
On that note, let's talk about Back to the Future instead. Because there is no football in Back to the Future.
Unless there is, and I forgot.
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
There's only
I was going to say basketball, but that's Teen Wolf.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wrong Marty.
Back to the Future, 1985.
1985.
Can we talk about ages?
Yeah, we can talk
about
ages.
How old were you in 1985?
I was three in 1985.
And so you saw it in the theater.
I saw it. No, I didn't. I saw it when I was four on home video.
That's not what I thought you were going to say.
I think too early. there's some adult themes in there.
Yeah, and you now you have nightmares trying to fall asleep thinking about the Libyans.
Yeah, exactly. Just like plutonium.
How old were you, do you remember seeing it the first time?
Well, I was born in 1985.
Right, so you probably didn't see it in the theater.
At the tail end of 1985. Yeah. So no, I definitely didn't see it in the theater.
Maybe you heard it through your mama's tummy?
In utero in the theater?
Yeah.
It was a big hit.
I do remember watching it a lot as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And the stuff that was like a little too adult just flew right over my head.
Oh, like sleeping with your own mother?
Yeah. It didn't like strike me as odd until much later.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
Because we're kind of talking about it now, and then we can get into what we like about it, maybe, instead of the other way around. The, like, Biff assault part of it is, like, such a bummer to me to realize the older I get that that's, like,
Why?
In there. Well,
because it's not like the movie condones it.
No, but it also doesn't treat it with...
The gravity.
Yeah, it doesn't treat it with enough gravity.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
Number one, because, like, there's that whole scene... of Marty and George, where they're talking about what they're going to do. And Marty is basically saying he's going to assault his own mom to put George in a situation where he can save Lorraine.
Yes, yeah.
So Marty is going to do what Biff is going to, but not to the degree. So it's okay. Like, he's going to be fast with his mom. And it's like, well, what the hell does that mean? Like, you're going to take it. He literally says,
girls don't like it when you
take advantage of them. And, like, that's a bad thing, and that's your mom, dude. That's your mom.
Girls don't like it. Yeah,
it's your mom.
And it's
then
creepy.
That's written with the writer's knowledge, who are all men. That she's fast, to use the parlance of the time.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So like that to them is okay because like she's asking for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's like into like, oh no, your mom is like
hot
all those
trot.
Things she said at the beginning of the movie in 1985 were not true. Whoa.
Yeah.
But like that's really fucked up. It's like just fucked up. And I would add on top of that that the second movie which, you know, starts from the end of the first one of Doc coming back from the future and saying we got to go back. Save your kids. It's your kids, Marty. We got to do something about your kids. What do they become, assholes or something? No, you know, that whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
That Bob Gale was like, if we would have known we were going to make a sequel, we never would have put Jennifer in the car.
Bob Gale was the writer. Okay.
That is a shitty way to treat women characters. That, like, man, if I would have known we were making another one, she wouldn't have been around.
That's why he regretted it.
Like, knock her out. You know, they knock her out in the car so they don't have to deal with her.
Right.
And then, like, honestly, that Elizabeth Shue stuff in the house where she's like, and then she runs into herself is some funny shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it is funny shit when she gets caught and she's like, trying to figure out where to go in her own house.
Yeah.
But it's not her house yet because she's old. And then they run in and they're like, I'm young. And that whole thing is some brilliant comedic shit. Like she does some good shit, but they just knock her out a bunch of times.
Mm-hmm.
And she faints and then they put her on the porch and she doesn't get to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
So like I take that and I put the Biff stuff in the context of all that. And I'm like, this sucks.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
well,
it just does suck. Cause it's like, and as a child and a girl child or whatever, that was like not a great message to get, because all that stuff is present, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, I think maybe more for girls watching it than for boys, because like the narrative is written by boys, so like you are like, yeah, okay, cool. And like, I'm not saying boys are bad for thinking that. That's just how it works. It's an echo chamber,
yeah,
of information.
Yeah.
And so then I see that and I'm like, oh, that's what's supposed to happen to me. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I'm a thing that gets tossed around.
It informs how you the role you see yourself playing in the world.
Yeah.
And it's harmful.
It's super harmful.
If you're a girl watching it, you're like, oh, the story isn't about me.
No.
The story is about the boys fighting over me.
Yeah,
fighting in the car.
Or assaulting me to get to a certain end, because, like, that'll be fine, right?
Yeah.
Because I'm supposed to be with that guy. And it's like, that's a terrible message to send.
Yeah.
It's also a terrible message to send to boys that you can do that to girls and it'll be all work out.
Right.
As a boy,
yes,
I would say that because this movie had an indelible mark on me as well,
yeah,
you know, of a certain age, we all kind of were like,
totally,
you know, it was one of the biggest movies of our childhoods.
And essentially, I would argue, and we can get into this later, because I want to hear what you said, I have to say, created a lot of the way our culture functions.
Oh, I can't wait to hear
popular
that.
Popular culture functions.
Yeah. Okay,
but continue.
My impression, what you talking about that just made me try to remember how I felt when I saw that scene, because that scene really is a powerful scene. It's an emotional scene.
Yeah, it's terrifying.
And you're fully familiar with the scene we're talking about where So he, the way I saw that as a boy was a mixture of fear that, like, this bully is someone I would have to evict, because I'm not the bully, obviously, in my own life.
Yeah.
So this is, like, a nemesis that I've already dealt with at a very young age. I mean, I probably saw it when I was, like, 7 or 8 or something like that. But I already am familiar with a bully. That he's in this movie, he's big, he's really scary. And so I'm relating to that part. I'm also relating to wanting to save a girl. I think that, that's something that even at a young age, like, boys are taught to
totally
feel really excited to do.
Yeah.
You
right.
know? And then the idea that if I get a good shot in, I can beat somebody who I have no business defeating.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
Like a David and Goliath type situation, right?
Yep.
All of these things. It's a mixture of fear a little bit. But the lesson I took away from that was... Yep. I can go for it. I can stand up for myself even if someone is bigger than me, which is so not the fucking lesson you guys get.
No.
It's not.
It's
like, are you worth saving?
Yeah, or, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or can you kind of fight this guy off until you can get saved?
And like, you have no agency.
Right.
You know, like your narrative. And I say all this. And my, you know, like, I don't know if it's like my gender identity, any of this stuff, but like, I watched that and I also thought of myself as Marty because I was like attracted to Lorraine, you know, like I also thought of myself as George. So like, I'm living in all these different places, but when you're, and I'm purposely using girls and boys because we're talking about when we were kids and I'm speaking in the binary because it is a binary conversation about like this girl culture, boy culture, and whatever you fit into, that is what you fit into. So as a child, that's what I was being fit into. But in my brain and my existence and stuff, I was fitting into a lot of those things. But I'm still like, I'm a girl, so I'm Lorraine. I'm Jennifer. I'm Lorraine. I'm Jennifer. I'm Lorraine.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like I'm Marty, though. You know, so like all this stuff is like, it's just very complicated. But I like hearing that point of view because it's, you know, not one that I, you know, most of the guys that I've heard that talk about it are just like, whatever, you know, like, it just is, you know, it's like,
no,
well, come on, it turns out. And
I
it's
see
like,
the contrast between what I got to feel from that scene and what girls get to feel from that scene.
Yeah.
You know?
And I mean, I do feel the triumph of George, like, knocking Biff on his ass, you know, because like there is also the part where
the good guy does
win. The good guy does win, and
it
is what's supposed to happen. Like they are supposed to fall, and this is like what's supposed to happen. But like, it also just sucks. You know, it's like, how could you make this different? And I think you could. You know,
right.
I think you could make that part of it a little bit different.
I actually identify with the clock tower because I'm broken.
But you are right twice a day.
Yeah, I am. Right, babe? Or is it maybe 1.5 times?
But yeah.
So let's talk about the positive
parts
of the movie.
Because that's just...
Do you love the movie?
I do love it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's so like a...
What do you think of first when you think of the movie? Like, what's the first image that comes in your
head? The first thing that comes to my mind is the shoes.
The shoes?
Yeah.
The Nikes?
His shoes, his Nikes.
Yeah, because they walk into frame.
Yeah. It's like the... I don't know. It's the first thing I think of anytime this movie
are
comes
those,
up.
They're not Cortezes. What are they?
No, they like are a, like a... Oh, I just...
I knew
was
you
looking,
would know this.
I was just looking at this the other day.
Because you've
so
been Marty for Halloween, right?
Yeah, you can't... You like can't buy them. They're like Blazer Lowe's or something like that.
Oh.
That are very specific specific colorway that you can't really get. So I've
so
always just worn
them.
Like white sneakers. Yeah.
Yeah. But they're full white?
No, they're white with red.
There's a
they
red,
have red
yeah.
swooshes.
Mm-hmm.
So they have like a toe, like a triangular toe cap,
mm-hmm.
and then a like a sort of a white crepe sole.
Okay.
And then the back, this little whatever this guy is called, this little heel thing mm-hmm. is also red.
Okay.
But then the rest of it is white, and they're just a very specific shoe.
Yeah.
Did
hard,
you,
hard to get?
Did you have a thing for Michael J. Fox in that movie, or not really?
I don't remember ever thinking that.
Mm-hmm.
No. I think I did in Teen Wolf. I was, mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe because I
he
saw that.
He sweats a lot in that one.
He does sweat a lot. And I was like, puberty.
Yeah.
That sounds fun. But no,
pheromones.
Yeah. I don't remember ever really thinking that.
Teen Wolf is also like, has that crazy, like, the cheerleader. She's a cheerleader.
Teen Wolf's
right?
not great.
The
no,
7 minutes, the 7 minutes in heaven part of Teen Wolf, I remember always feeling like this is
crazy disturbing.
It's really hard to watch.
Yeah. But there's also the scene where she's like in her underwear, right?
I don't remember.
The like cheerleader
I just
girl.
Saw it,
I mean,
I don't remember.
It like, she's very much like, it's very, oof.
Well, luckily, that's not your soft spot.
Yeah, that's
back
not my soft spot. Back to the future.
Let's go back
to the future.
So that's cool that your first idea is his shoes. I like that.
Yeah.
That's cool.
That's always what I immediately go to.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mine is the flames on the road and Huey Lewis.
Yeah.
Like,
that's
what
I
love Huey Lewis.
Yeah, oh my God.
You.
I fucking
like
love
the music
Huey
part or the I'm afraid you're just too darn loud.
No, the like
hearing
the chorus Lewis. Power of love.
Bow.
Yeah. And the flames on the road. I don't know why. That's what I think of.
He plays that song so
iconic.
Often that our kids think it's like a new song.
Wow. That's awesome.
I love Huey Lewis. I grew up in
Huey
San Francisco
great,
where
man.
they're from there. And so when growing up, I was like, yeah, that's our band. They're,
yeah.
You know, they played all the Warriors games and they were like always around. You could just like go hang out. You couldn't just go hang out with them, but they. But
Huey
yeah,
Lewis,
man, what I,
man.
So I, the. Yeah, the movie is, I'm always surprised at how problematic it was to get it made, because when these movies come out and they feel so perfect, you think, oh, this must have just flowed from someone's mind and heart, and it was like, you know, this perfect situation. And it was an extremely problematic movie to get
made.
Well,
yeah, I mean, Disney wanted nothing to do with it because of that. And did you know that originally it wasn't a DeLorean, it was a fridge?
What?
And then they used it in Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull. So, you know, in the beginning of that, he has to run from an atomic bomb test.
Mm-hmm.
He gets into a fridge and it shoots him out of he like blows out of the fake town that they're doing it in.
Uh-huh.
That was the idea for the thing. So instead of plutonium or whatever, it was a fridge
was
and
freon.
Atomic testing.
Oh, okay.
Because like fridges are lead lined, or they used to be back in the, you know, 40s and 50s.
Yeah.
Or whatever. And so it was just like a lead lined, you know.
Back when America used to make stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And they didn't care about what it did to your brains and shit like that.
Yeah.
Then he says at the beginning, he's like, all set now. It's lead lined. I was worried on my way over because I was like, I haven't seen it in a minute. But like, there are times where I will get into, I can do like the lines of that movie and I can just go for a long time.
Yeah.
But often I do it backwards. Like I start with one and then I go backwards, which is weird.
That
I do
is
the
weird.
Lines backwards. One of my more recent, because this is also what I love about this movie, is that it is a movie that you, as you grow up, you see more of it because you start to see it from different perspectives.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Like, so 6 Feet Under is a show that's like that for me. Like, you watch it the first time and you're like, oh, I'm Claire, I'm so-and-so, and then I'm Nate, and then you are like, oh, no, I'm kind of Brenda, and then you're like, oh, I'm Claire. You know, like, you go through this whole thing, then you're like, I'm a combination of all of them. But then you watch this movie and you start to see it. It's less from Marty's perspective, more from, like, Lorraine's perspective. So at the beginning, and they're all sitting down for dinner, and, you know, your Uncle Joey didn't make parole again, throws the cake down, whack, and it's, like, such a great shot. And, Mom, his sister says something about it, and she sits down and she goes, "Oh, well, we all make mistakes in life, children." What? It's so good because you're like, oh shit, her kids are mistakes. Like, she hates her life.
Oh, I didn't get that. She hates her life. Oh, that's
so
interesting.
She's sitting there like, what was it, George?
The feminine mystique.
You know, like she hates everything. She's drinking Papa vodka in the kitchen.
Oh,
you know,
I
like,
didn't even catch that.
It is funny how as you get older, you start to identify with more than what you've been taught you are.
Oh, yeah.
Things about yourself that you discover and then you see in other characters. I do love that about like revisiting things.
Yeah.
It is
and you're
super
like,
interesting.
You're a kid, so you have like the most basic understanding, at least in this movie specifically, of what the beginning is supposed to mean. Like, oh, they don't have a great life, like their house is kind of cruddy and like they don't seem super happy. Then you become an adult and you're like, oh wow, now I really understand like why like why these things are the way that they are. And then so then the change pays off even more and it's like less about the stuff and more about the happiness, like that they're like they like each other,
that they're a family,
that they love each other and like I always wear a suit to the office.
Want to tell everyone about Third Love.
Are we experimenting in the bedroom?
No, we're talking about the best bra that these mammary glands have ever had the pleasure of resting in.
Yeah.
And, you know, they use millions of real women's measurements, and they design bras with breast size and shape in mind for an impeccable fit and an incredible feel. You take a quiz. They have a Fit Finder quiz, and you answer a couple of quick questions. Over 10 million have taken the... Over 10 million women have taken the quiz to date, and it's actually pretty fun, and it takes less than a minute to complete. And that's when I sent you the screenshot. You get to pick out which size, which shape your boobies are.
Right.
And
I panicked when you sent me that because I was like, if I get this wrong, I'm never going to see them again.
I sent it with no caption. I just sent him the picture.
Yeah.
But they help you identify your breast size and shape, and then they find the style that fits your body. Also pretty cool, they have cup sizes A through H, band sizes up to 48, so they're fairly size inclusive, and 50% of all women fall in between standard cup sizes, so they have a half cup sizing, which is kind of genius, because one of the biggest problems that us ladies run into when it comes to bras is there being either a gap or a little bit of overflow,
right.
And neither of these things look particularly cute under clothes, so it's kind of nice to make sure that they're gonna hug them just right.
Well, in the old days, the cool ladies, if they had a gap, they would like put their keys in there and stuff, right? But nobody's doing that anymore.
I've definitely used mine as an extra pocket, but that's no longer an option because now I have a bra that fits. It is hands down the most comfortable bra you'll own. And ladies, I'm literally wearing one right now. I can tell you it's super comfortable. Also, one of my pet peeves, whenever you can see the bra line on my back and I got a little like... You know, it squeezes you a little too tight. This bra does not do that. It looks really sleek under clothes. And it's tagless, so there's no itching, and the straps don't slip, and the fabrics are super smooth. It looks really good under T-shirts or, honestly, whatever. I've worn this bra with fancy stuff, with whatever. I'm wearing it with a T-shirt right now, and I think these knockers look fantastic. So.
Can I tell them what they get?
Yeah, you can tell them what they get.
If you go to thirdlove.com/softspot now to find your perfect fitting bra, you get 15% off your first purchase. Just for listening to this show and putting in thirdlove.com/softspot, you get 15% off today. So go do that.
Yeah, ladies, you won't regret it. You're a guy who has traveled a lot.
I have traveled too much.
Yeah.
Yes.
You are, when I met you, you were almost always on the road.
Yeah.
And there will always be reasons for you to go on the road because you're a performer.
I was on the road so much that my suitcase, my previous suitcase, I don't remember the brand right now, but the rubber on the wheels, it wore off and they fell off like a truck tire on the freeway. So I've been, my old suitcase
is traveling man.
It's just plastic wheels on the ground. It's disgusting. So you can only imagine how happy I was when Away
was like,
came out.
Let's solve that problem for you.
I saw their ad on Instagram and I was like, I need this suitcase. It has a charger in it for your phone in your suitcase.
Yeah, it charges your phone and it's super lightweight and the wheels are super smooth. It's like having a suitcase with power steering.
It is. I was so excited about this Away suitcase that you made fun of me. Do you remember?
I did.
I walked it over to you in the house and I said, man, these wheels got great action. You're like, okay, Dad.
Yeah. I don't know if that's how you actually talk about rolling suitcases.
It's how I talk about it.
That's how he talked about it.
These suitcases are made from lightweight, durable, listen to this, German polycarbonate or aluminum alloy. I mean, so it's German, so you know you're always going to be on time. You can charge your phone up to 5 times from the optional TSA-compliant ejectable battery in our carry-ons, which you can easily remove with one click. There is an interior compression system that lets you pack more. You need that.
It's true. A lot of people need that. But yes, you know, when you're a lady and you're packing and you want some options in there,
mm-hmm.
you want to be able to squeeze as much as you can in there. And honestly, it's like opening a cupboard or something. It feels like you can put so much stuff in there. You're like Mary Poppins.
Yeah.
Just keep pulling stuff out of the bag.
I will say, as a Delta Diamond Medallion member, so I really am I was on the road so much. This suitcase feels like it answered every question I ever had. And it solved all my problems. I love it.
Also very nice. It has a TSA-approved combination lock, which I didn't even know existed. So that's kind of awesome.
Yeah. So you can totally... Never mind. I won't make that joke. Okay.
For $20 off of an Away suitcase, visit awaytravel.com/softspot and use promo code SOFTSPOT during checkout. Because this season... everyone wants to get away.
Mm-hmm.
And it's true. This is also, there are a lot of really great travel deals. It's a really great present to get someone.
It is.
So if you want to, I don't know, throwing this gift idea out there for all the dudes who just have no clue, book your lady a trip.
Right.
And get, maybe put the travel itinerary inside of the Away suitcase.
Ooh,
that you purchased for her.
Yeah.
I know, romance. I'm an expert. $20 off of this suitcase. And they have a lot of really great choices in color. They all look really sleek and cute. Visit awaytravel.com/softspot. Again, use promo code SOFTSPOT at checkout for $20 off of a suitcase.
Mm-hmm. You can also go to Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter. Go put in Away or Away Luggage. You can check it out really quick. You see what it looks like. It's awesome. Go get an Away suitcase. Use our promo code. The holidays are just around the corner. How, Meg, is your holiday shopping going?
Well, mine's done.
You're annoying.
Mine's been done, baby. This is actually Canvas People. This is actually one of the best gifts that I can think of to buy, like, really anyone in your life, something a little more personalized and significant that they'll definitely want to keep for a really long time. They print your favorite memories on canvas, and then they turn them into unique works of art that add a really beautiful touch to your home. I always think that personalized gifts, if you can pull it off without being super corny, which this is not, it's kind of the best way to go. It just shows someone an extra level of thought was put in. It's great for if you live far away from your family, as we do, and we have kids, and everybody wants pictures of them. So it's a really cool way to turn family photos into art. And
it's such a cool product, and they do such a good job that even my Aunt Claire, rest her soul, her entire house was filled with Elvis memorabilia. I mean, it was just like everywhere was Elvis. But I guarantee you, if I had sent her a Canvas People canvas with Elvis on it, she would have been like, this is amazing. And it's going up over the fireplace. So it's a really great product. If you go to carepeople.com and put in... Can't find it.
Care People. What are you...
I'm looking for their promo code. Oh, okay.
Hold on. Canvas People.
Oh, Canvas People. Yeah. Sorry.
So right now is a special offer for the holidays. CanvasPeople.com is offering their popular 11 by 14 photo canvas for free.
What?
That's right. It's free. These normally sell for $69.99, but for this week only, you'll pay nothing. Just cover shipping and handling. To get your free canvas, text SOFTSPOT to 797979. Just pay shipping and handling. This offer won't last. Text SOFTSPOT to 797979. That's SOFTSPOT to 797979. Message and data rates may apply.
A soft spot.
The character that I would watch another movie about that they never did was the mayor guy. The
mayor, Goldie Wilson.
Goldie Wilson.
I like the sound
of that. His name is Goldie?
Goldie Wilson.
I forgot
Wilson,
about
yeah.
that. My daughter's name is Goldie.
He's going to be mayor.
Yeah. She would love being mayor.
Yes, she
and you
would.
Be the baby.
And you be the baby. Now you're asleep.
And you be the sheriff. Yeah, he's a lot of fun. By the way, you mentioned Crystal Skull, which
yes.
has Indiana Jones. I assume you didn't see it because not a lot of people
saw it in the theater.
Me too.
Because I was really excited.
I don't remember Indiana Jones at all.
Oh, okay.
Like any of them?
This
or
was
just
the one that?
I don't
that was
think
made.
I've seen any
this,
of them.
Oh,
this
wow.
This is Shia LaBeouf. This is way later. This is like the last one they made.
See, and it was Back to the Future and Indiana Jones, those were my jam. Like,
yeah.
I was not a huge Star Wars person. I didn't, like, actively dislike it or anything. But,
yeah.
like, my mom and I, because I had a single mom, and, like, Friday nights, Saturday nights would be like, which trilogy are we watching?
Yeah.
In reality, we would just watch Raiders and Last Crusade. We did not watch Temple of Doom's very dark. It's so dark and just not fun.
Yeah.
You know, like, the cart ride is very fun. And also, Steven Spielberg's wife, Kate, whatever her name is.
Blanchett.
Kate Blanchett, star of Carol. Is so just like insufferable in that in that second one that you're like
it is fun though
God.
When he rips your breathing heart out of your chest
yeah,
and shows
totally.
It to you.
But
That's
it's just
fun.
Not the Raiders and Last Crusade are so fun.
Crystal Skull has the worst last line of a movie you've ever
Ooh.
Heard in your
oh,
entire life.
Oh, I have
life.
Heard you say this.
What
yeah.
is it? I don't remember.
Anytime somebody brings up Crystal Skull, which does not happen very
not
often,
very often
I have
to
remind
to
everyone how bad this last line is.
Yes.
Okay. It turns out the real treasure was knowledge. Credits.
Fuck
yeah.
you.
Yeah. Like, everyone in the theater is supposed to be like, whoa!
That's so...
Yeah.
God damn it.
I know. It's like, did a ninth grader... Like, no offense, ninth graders.
Yeah.
Write this?
Oh,
yeah.
That's pretty bad.
Pretty brutal.
Back to the Future
yes.
has so much... fun in it.
Yeah.
It's so
I also
fun.
Couldn't nail down a single iconography thing because that's what's so
you're
great.
Too in, you're too inside it.
Yeah, too inside. And also like that is something that I love about that movie is, and I say this all the time whenever I talk about it. I mean, it's a 90-minute movie and there is not a single frame in that movie that you don't need.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? There's nothing in mm-hmm. there that isn't telling you something about some, and it's not Easter eggs. It's just like everything in there is informing the story that's happening. So like you were said the shoes, and so then I was thinking like what is the first thing, and the first thing is clocks ticking.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
How brilliant is that? It's just
yeah.
like tick, in his thing, and then you see all the clocks, and then you see the newscast about the plutonium being stolen, then you see the plutonium under the thing, then you see Marty open the thing, put the key under the mat. Okay, that means he does that often, and it's mm-hmm. supposed to be there. He's supposed to come in. Then he has all those inventions that don't really work, and it's gross, and then he plugs in and he blows it up. There's a slight chance of overload. All this shit, like
yeah.
everything in there is meant to be in there. Like you can't, there's
except
not a wasted
a
frame.
Woman's agency.
Except a woman's agency, absolutely, yes.
That's true.
You see the two television sets
yeah.
in their house in 1985, and then he goes to 1955, and they're like, do you have a television set? And he's like, yeah, we got two of them. And they're like,
yeah.
I mean, he's teasing
oh, yeah,
you.
No.
Nobody has two televisions.
And then it's the rerun thing.
Yeah.
What I was struck by, we watched the trailer, the original trailer
oh, nice.
In the car
yeah.
before we walked in.
You know, like Cliff's Notes.
I love yeah. it. I love it.
Just like as a refresher. I haven't seen it in
sure,
probably
yeah.
a year or more.
Mm-hmm.
And as a tribute to Michael J. Fox's performance in that movie, his character is confident.
Yep.
And he's not cocky,
no.
But he's a very confident person.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it's not obnoxious.
No.
But there
because
are things,
he's also vulnerable.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's able to do that.
Yeah.
Even just with, I don't know if it's with his eyes or whatever.
Yeah.
But he's able, it also helps to be, what, 5'2 or whatever?
Sure, yeah.
But,
yeah.
Confidence at 5'2 comes across as spunky.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But yeah, I was like, wow, it's really.
And you know he was shooting Family Ties while he was making this movie.
Yeah, he did it on sleep.
None.
That's crazy.
Whatsoever. Because there's like a lot of night stuff. So all that night stuff at the beginning at the mall and then the night stuff at the end, you know, that's what they shot first while he was shooting.
Man.
Family Ties.
They're like, it's got to be at night because
yeah.
That's when he's available.
Pretty much. I mean, it looks great.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, I feel like those movies, especially Back to the Future, and maybe Ferris Bueller a little bit.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Is they have that pacing and that fun that movies today
don't have.
They don't seem to be able to do it.
There's not a time. You can tell
when they're trying,
yeah.
And it still doesn't work. I don't know why.
It's so rare. I feel like everything's so hyper-written, and it's mm-hmm. all about what people are saying as mm-hmm. opposed to what they're doing when they're saying it.
Yeah.
Right.
That
name names. I'm just kidding.
I can tell you a movie that gives me this feeling that's maybe it's not a direct... Ferris Bueller's Day Off or Back to the Future or Breakfast Club, any of those, where you feel like I live here. This is where I live.
Mm-hmm.
When you're watching this movie, you're like, I live, this is where I am.
I live
in this moment.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on this adventure. But more like less about what they're saying and more about what's happening is this movie called The Overnight that came out a couple years ago.
Mm-mm.
And that's more of an adult movie than the movies we're talking about. And definitely like more of a
90s.
So it's Adam Scott and Taylor Schilling and
Jason Schwartzman. Seen that. It's really good.
It's really good
because
it's just like, here's what the story is. It's they wrote out a literal one sheet, and then we're like, all right, what's the script? And then it's like four people in a house overnight. And then, mm-hmm. and they like interact with each other, and it trades off in ways that make a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I don't remember anything any of them said, but I felt like I spent the night with these people, mm-hmm. and that's the point
totally.
Of the movie. And so that is maybe one of the only ones that I've seen in a long time.
I think
because everything, it uses such huge devices to get you, like I watched Game Night and that was like fun, but that's a huge, it's device after device
we
after device.
We saw that one.
Because
it's an action
Smoked
movie.
A lot, don't remember much.
but yeah, everything's so big.
Yeah.
You know, everything's big. It can't be simple because Back to the Future is like, people call it a sci-fi movie, but it's really just like a teen hangout movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's like... The DeLorean happens and it doesn't work. Then he's stuck in 1955. He's a fish out of water.
Mm-hmm.
I think that all those old movies, and I'm thinking about like Back to the Future and Ferris Bueller, it felt more composed all around. And like you were saying, there were meaningful things in every shot. And
yeah.
It just felt so thought out. And I just don't get that from a lot of movies now.
No. I also think that... movies are maybe written with people in mind
mm-hmm.
for them.
Yeah.
More, and this has always happened, but more now than then. Because Back to the Future wasn't written with
Michael J. Fox
in mind, necessarily.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, he might have been, but he wasn't available
wasn't.
At first.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, they might have been like, he would be our first pick for this.
Right.
But I don't think they sat down and wrote, like, this is going to be a Michael J. Fox movie.
Right.
Yeah.
So
it's
let's
write
be a
around
story.
Him.
It's going
like,
to be a good
yeah,
story.
Let's write the movie
be.
And find
yeah.
the people that fit in the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Ferris Bueller is the same way. You know, John Hughes is like very character driven. I don't think, you know, Molly Ringwald was like a whatever muse or whatever for him. But I think. He wrote the characters because he put her in different. She played. She didn't play Molly Ringwald in every
right.
movie.
No,
she was a different person in every
mm-hmm.
role in his movies. So
I think it also had to do. It has to do with like the movies we're talking about are comedies that were finished. A lot of comedies
yeah.
that are most. I would say 95% of comedies are funny for the first like third or half.
Yeah,
and mm-hmm. then the plot falls apart or
always.
It becomes too crazy
serious
or whatever.
Third act
problems.
Yeah.
And these
two genres that have serious third act problems regularly: comedies
mm-hmm.
and sci-fi.
Mm-hmm.
And Back to the Future is both of those things, and it doesn't have any third act problems.
Right,
because it set itself up. Because like you have to get back.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So he's gonna get back, right?
Yeah.
I do think what you said about movies being written with someone in mind,
it's true.
It's like that totally ruins things. Now I'm going through my mind and thinking about all of these movies that I know or have read or heard that were written for someone.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that sucks.
Yeah.
It really...
We see enough of all of the same people that are in every single movie.
Also, no offense, how do you write a movie for Blake Lively?
Sure. Yeah, exactly. And she was tremendous in A Simple Favor.
Yeah, she
I don't
was
think
great
that,
in it.
That was like, you know, that was a book. So it was written, it was made. She got cast in it. She got to do something.
Yeah.
She got to do something instead of just being Blake Lively or whatever. That movie was awesome.
How far have I come that you gave me credit for her idea and I said, no, it was hers? Usually I steal people's ideas.
I am super impressed by that. I'm sorry. I like spun out and was thinking about all of these movies.
It happens.
And I'm like, man. It's so true.
Yeah.
It's like write a good story and then
find the pieces that fit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Put it together like a puzzle.
And I think TV is like that too, because so often, you know, people are making the
shows
a
lot
to put
of
themselves
bad TV.
In or whatever. And it's like, I just don't think, I don't think it helps the writing process to really solidly know who it's going to, or try to write to a person.
Right.
And their performance, because you're dictating their performance.
Right.
Which is weird.
Yeah. I think another reason this movie is so engrossing is because there's a real sense of it's its own world, and you want to be there. You want to live in the world.
Yeah.
I think that other movies that do that are like, we've never seen it, but I know it's true for people. Harry Potter does that.
Yeah.
It's an experience.
Yeah, you're like, I want to live with these people.
But you know what's unique about Back to the Future is it was the first movie to have product placement. And so, while it is a fictional place in California, there was this reality that we could all glom onto of like Pepsi,
buy some
DeLorean and Nikes, and even his skateboard, and like there's a dude in a Mountain Dew hat, you know, like
and Carhartt vests.
Yeah,
Does anyone know what brand?
I don't think it
is
a brand of anything. It doesn't have a brand on it, and so all those things, you are real.
Yeah,
you're sitting at home with a Pepsi, and you're like, yeah, that's a real thing. Mm-hmm. And so then you start talking about Ronald Reagan, the actor.
Mm-hmm.
You get all of this stuff, and this is what I'm talking about with the pop culture thing that I brought up earlier.
Yeah.
Because this is the first, like, I mean, it's, I think, the first accessibly meta movie that was made for, like, mass consumption.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Which then essentially created, like, the culture that we live in now, where, like, everything... And what I was saying about the economy of, like, shots and everything that's in it is also true of all of this stuff, where, like, everything folds in on itself and references itself.
Yeah.
And so then we just started doing that as a culture.
Yeah, yeah.
But we were already doing it as a culture by electing Ronald Reagan as president.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so, like, it's not like Back to the Future started it and that's the problem. Like, we were already starting to fold as America, a country, like,
but it made like a perfect package of it, right?
Yeah,
right,
it's just
in the
like
beginning
it's
of
a,
it.
It's a time capsule, if you will.
I won't. I will not.
Here's a quaint little item from the 1980s.
Yeah.
It's called a dustbuster. Did you know?
No.
That in
probably not
that scene where he goes into the like vintage antiques shop in 2015 and buys the Gray Sports Almanac. In the window, when he first walks in and sees it, there's a bunch of stuff. Roger Rabbit doll is one of the things. I had that doll.
Mm-hmm.
Also, his jacket.
My dad had the Jessica Rabbit doll.
Gross.
Just joking. I don't think they made one.
I don't
they
think
couldn't.
They did.
Yeah.
He made it himself.
Yeah.
His jacket, his jean jacket from the first movie is in the display of that antique store.
Oh, this is in two when he goes to the antique store. Yeah, because there's no almanac in the first one.
No, not in the first. I was jumping ahead to the second one.
Yeah.
So pause on that frame.
Or were you jumping back to the second one?
Was I jumping back?
You were jumping forward. It was forward.
Yeah, it was forward. Technically, yes. At that moment, it was still forward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, two is fun. Do you remember two at all?
No.
Really?
Barely.
Biff grows up. He's powerful and rich because he has the sports almanac.
I remember the basic gist of it, but I don't remember
any of the specifics. Because they create a tangential 1985. Marty creates a tear in the space-time continuum by buying the Gray's almanac. Doc takes it from him, throws it in the trash. Old Biff in 2015 finds it. When they have to go pick up Jennifer in Hill... what is estates, because he lives in the nice place, but it's not the nice place in 2015. They go find Jennifer. Old Biff steals the time machine, goes back to 1955, gives his younger self the Gray Sports Almanac, goes back to the future, and also has like a stroke, I guess, because you're not supposed to meet yourself, which they've talked about.
They talk about
it in the first one. They talk about it in the second one. It's like a big problem. He does that, and then he gets out of the thing. He has like a heart attack. I guess he was supposed to disappear, but they were like, this didn't test well. It was like too dark. Then they get back and they go back to 1985, and it is a completely different 1985 where George McFly has been shot, and this has happened to me, and Doc Brown has been put into an insane asylum.
The point is that I was going to get to. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Is that I was young enough when I saw that, and this is what's so sweet about and gives me hope for young people is the innocence is not something that. Is alterable, or what am I thinking? I guess my point is, no matter how we're all worried that like kids today are not going to be they're going to lose their innocence faster because of the internet and social media and all that stuff, right? Mm-hmm. But there is there's just something about experience that you just can't substitute at all.
No, you can't.
Innocence is a real thing, and it's going to exist in our children for a while.
Yeah.
You know, up to a certain age, and Back to the Future too. I saw probably when I was, I'm going to say 12 or whatever.
Yeah, it came out in 89.
Yeah.
Because I did see it in the theater. I was so stoked.
Yeah. So, probably 11 or 12. And it made me so sad and sick.
Yeah.
Because it took that movie that I
felt
so good about and loved in the first one and turned that universe upside down for a minute and made it dystopian. And I can still recall the feelings I had back then as a kid and being like, this doesn't feel good. I don't like it at all.
I know.
You know?
I do remember because I'm only a little younger than you. Mm-hmm. And so when I saw it, I do remember being like, I thought we were going to spend a bunch of time in the future.
Yeah, it's like, I don't even need
all
conflict.
This stuff is cool.
Give me two more hours of hanging out.
But as an adult, when I watch it now, I'm like, oh, this is pretty brilliant. But
it doesn't,
because you're like, oh, did you love this movie? Guess what? We're going to watch it again.
Yeah.
But as a kid, it's not satisfying at all.
No.
It's actually, really brutal, where you're like, oh my God, this is not what I wanted.
Yeah.
This was supposed to be fun.
And then you go through puberty and you're like, I feel like this all the time.
We just watched another time travel. It was like a mini series, the James Franco one.
Oh God, why'd you bring that up?
Because the Kennedy thing?
Yeah.
Oof.
I started it and was like, I don't even, this is terrible.
Oh.
I'll just watch some Quantum Leap. Thank you.
Exactly. Well, first of all, after about one episode, I was like, this could have been shortened. It didn't need to be like seven hours or whatever.
I was into the first episode.
But I was constantly going back to the Future in my mind as we were watching it, thinking about the rules of time travel.
Right.
Because that has now become like, Bible, time travel, that's how it works.
That's how it works. Something that doesn't work.
Exactly.
Doesn't exist at all.
Exactly.
By the way.
But I'm like, those are the rules.
Yeah.
That's how it's done.
You guys are going to kill me for saying this, but James Franco doesn't have the charisma of Michael J. Fox.
Get out of here. How dare you?
Well, I will
I am a Francophile.
I don't want to give away too much because maybe some people out there will feel like wasting 7 hours.
Give it away. No one gives a shit.
But whenever he meets the lady, I immediately was like, oh shit, it's his mom. I immediately thought that it must be his mom or
automatically, like, if you go back in time.
I was like, he's going to bone his mom.
You bone your mom. That's the price you pay for time travel.
That is the price you pay. You have to bone your mom.
Yeah.
Or the reward, depending on how edible you are.
Oh, man. Well, have you guys been to any of the filming locations? Because I've been to the Burger King at the beginning. I've been to Doc Brown's house in 1955. I've been to Lorraine's house, and I've been to George McFly's house. I've also been to Biff's house, which is only seen in Back to the Future Part 2.
Does it count if I got all
in Pasadena, except for the Burger King is in Burbank. It's on Victory Boulevard.
I was going to say Burbank would have been my guess, but
Does it count if I got lost in Elizabeth Shue's eyes? Does that count as being in a
count,
location?
Yeah. It does count being in a location.
I could. So tell us where these places are. Burger King's in Burbank.
They're all in Pasadena. All the other ones are in Pasadena. And
of course it's in Pasadena.
Of course. They're all like old looking and stuff.
I love Pasadena.
And I went to the Gamble House, which is the mansion that they used for Doc Brown's mansion on one of the anniversaries, the 30th, I guess, recently. Mm-hmm. And they had, you know, it was like an event, so they had all these picture cards, like people who had made DeLoreans to look like different versions of the DeLorean out front, and then we watched the movie in the yard, and so the scene when he's running with all the blueprints to the thing, he's like, I'm sorry, you know, whatever, good night future boy, that scene, we're sitting in the yard that he's
That's
running
crazy.
In and it was like it was a really awesome moment.
That's
they also
so
played
cool.
a little
and then you all had strokes.
We all had strokes and died because it was a tear in the space-time continuum. There's a really cool documentary that was a little too long, but somebody moved into the street that has all those other houses that I met, because they're all on the same street.
Oh, wow.
And so people, he moved.
It's almost like they were lazy.
Let's just turn it around.
Yeah.
And people will come look at the tree that George falls out of when he's peeping and being a creep on Lorraine. And this guy didn't realize that's what it was. And so then he would walk out and talk to people. So he made a documentary about it and then like how much the movie meant to people. Also happened to be there, and this is previous to the documentary really starting, when they were filming Back to the Future Part 2, or talked to a neighbor that that lived there.
Mm-hmm.
And that guy was on his porch filming a scene. It is the scene when Doc Brown tries to go get Marty out of the garage.
Mm-hmm.
Marty has been locked into the garage, but he has snuck into Biff's car and been driven out, and Doc is there too late, and he rides his bike out, and he's like, damn, where is that kid? Pulls the price tag off of his hat and then leaves. It's that scene, and this guy was out filming on his porch, and they're like, hey man, you can't do that, you gotta go back inside. So he goes upstairs and he shot the scene with his own camcorder from his own house, and it is the take that's in the movie.
What?
So I saw, yes.
How did they know that he had it?
They don't know. Like, the guy making the movie doesn't know. Back to the Future doesn't know that he shot it. The guy making the documentary was knocking on doors saying, were you here when we were filming? And he was like, yeah, check this out. I shot this from my upstairs.
Oh, the take, not the actual shot that they... I'm like,
no,
did they take
the
his camera?
No, not the actual shot, but he shot...
I'm like,
I thought he was
sorry.
Like, hey guys,
what
I
mean
got
is,
this.
Yeah, yeah, I'm like, how did they blend that seamlessly?
through a screen window?
Yeah, he had like an RCA.
But like, he shot from another angle
the
on his own personal
take.
Game.
Wow.
The actual take that they actually use in the film. And it's that to me, as like a movie nerd, is like, mwah, I love that.
That's
it's
amazing.
It's very cool.
Well, I'm feeling in my bones that we are over time. I haven't seen looked
we're
at a
right
clock.
There.
Or, oh, we are?
Right
oh, okay.
There.
Great.
And we didn't even get like
somebody do something.
Somebody do something.
That's my alarm, sorry.
Yeah, I just like that movie to me, it like honestly really defined me as a person for like a long time in that like I liked playing guitar. I liked skateboarding. You know, like all the things that I just have always felt like that Marty McFly. I don't know. Like, I just have felt like that person.
I still think a sleeveless puffy vest looks good because
it
of
does,
that movie.
Dude, it
I
does.
Own one. It's not orange.
It's, yeah.
Because I'm not that ballsy.
You're not that ballsy.
I'm also not going to cosplay every day
sure,
of my
yeah,
life.
Yeah, of course. You don't want to do that because someone will say it to you every single day that
do you
wear.
Own one?
Yeah, I own one that doesn't look accurate.
Oh, okay.
One day I'll have one that's accurate. My mom told me my
when your ship
entire
comes
child,
in.
Yeah, when my ship when I'm in port. My mom told me my whole life she was gonna make me one of those, and then she never did. She worked at Joann Fabrics.
She all like, she did was raise
oh,
you by
I
herself.
Love Joann. Just raise me by myself.
Thanks for nothing,
an
mom.
Assistant manager at Joann Fabrics.
Was she?
She was, yeah.
I spent so much time and money at
Dude,
Joann's.
I spent my whole childhood there.
I am a
and it was
crafter.
A mall. It was a mall Joann Fabrics too. So I was at the mall like every day.
And this
which
was in
is
Ohio,
also,
right?
Yeah, in Ohio.
Can you think of a more Midwestern? Although Ohio is Ohio the Midwest.
It is, yeah.
Okay, a more Midwestern experience than working at a Joann's in Ohio?
No,
that's like,
no, I cannot.
Is her name not Karen?
No, it's not actually,
it?
But it's pretty good, Diane.
Oh! Diane.
It's pretty close.
It's pretty good.
Diane's
the Karen of the Midwest.
Diane's the Karen of names.
But you know what's amazing? Her sister's name, Karen.
There you go.
You have an Aunt Karen?
I have two Aunt Karens.
I only have one Aunt Karen.
I've got two Aunt Karens. I've got one on each side.
Do you have any good aunt names?
I have a Susie and
aunt
a Vicky.
Susie.
I got a Sue also.
And a Kelly. So mine are...
Aunt Kelly.
Aunt Vicky's good.
Aunt Vicky's
that's
good.
Real
yeah.
good.
Yeah.
That's a real aunt.
Mm-hmm.
She wants to see the manager.
She does. She for sure does.
You got to come back and talk about Joann's because we love Joann's.
Yeah, for sure, man. I'll talk about...
Joann's is like one of my ultimate soft spots. I know. Get a Joann's.
I wasn't kidding. We can go back to the podcast.
Yes, let's do it. You remember when like...
You might be our first double guest.
I'll do it.
Yeah.
When it was called Take Your Daughter to Work Day when it first started.
Uh-huh.
That's where I went. I went to work at Joann's.
Oh, my God.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
I would have died.
Yeah. At the mall.
That's so great.
I worked at the mall for Your Daughter to Work Day.
You could, like, take a break from making wreaths and go get an Auntie Anne's pretzel.
No, mm-hmm. We had Hot Sam's.
Hot Sam's?
What's that?
It's just a different thing.
It's Ohio's.
The pretzels. It's Ohio's answer to Auntie
Anne's. Well, it was way before Auntie Anne's.
Oh, okay.
Like, Auntie Anne's came on the scene way later, and this was way more of like a classic soft pretzel as opposed to whatever that gooey thing.
Sorry,
that
they're doing. You're, something a little.
You're a pretzel
and we
purist.
Had Orange Julius. Yes, I am definitely a pretzel purist for sure.
Isn't that gross to be like, what did you have for lunch? Hot Sam's and an Orange Julius.
Like,
who are these?
Are
pimps?
You okay?
You sound like pimps.
Are you in trouble?
Are you in trouble? Yeah, they both sound like guys that you owe money to.
In about 45 minutes, yeah, definitely, for sure.
Oh, man, yeah, we got to talk about that.
Yeah,
that's
totally.
Great. Well, thank you so much,
Rhea. No, thanks for having me.
Thank
this
you.
Is
yeah.
so great.
We could have discovered a whole new episode at the end of our episode, but we got to have
this
one.
This is, hey, I'm really good at podcasting.
Yeah. You can't take credit for your mom's job.
I can't take credit for my mom's job. But.
We'll do it again.
Great.
Thank you so much for listening.
Thanks for having me.
Rate and review us on iTunes. Right?
Yep.
Yeah?
Yep. Subscribe.
Mm-hmm.
Subscribe
to stuff. Do you have a podcast right now?
I do. I have a baseball podcast. It's called Three Swings. Mm-hmm. And many people have told me that they don't like baseball at all, but they like my podcast. So
all right.
It's not one, like, I mean, you heard me talk about baseball up top of this thing. It's not, I mean, I talk about a lot of things on there and I talk about baseball. It's like a life podcast with a baseball focus. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because, like, to me, baseball is a lens that I view life through.
Well, that's like us because a lot of people don't like me, but they like our podcast.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
It's true.
Same shit.
Every comment is like, more Meg.
It's like, don't talk over Meg. Quit interrupting Meg.
Oh, well.
Thank you.
That's it. And I think I speak for all of us when I say the real treasure was knowledge.
It's definitely knowledge.
It's mall pretzels.
Yeah.